Everybody, welcome to Stoppage Time. I'm Jimmy Vance. I'm with Jason Longshore and Mike Conti, the Atlanta United Radio broadcast team. And everybody, I appreciate you all covering for me last week. I introduced my wife, gave birth to a beautiful baby girl. Her name is Becca. So I really appreciate you guys while I was out of the office holding down the fort here with Stoppage Time.
I'm glad Becca looks like your wife.
Yes. And a big shout out to my wife, Carrie, and my mother-in-law, Becky. Her birthday was yesterday, but I appreciate y'all with everything they do with taking care of my baby girl.
Congratulations.
So I appreciate
that's awesome.
It. Have you slept?
A little bit, but my wife is...
Don't get used to it.
No, my wife is a trooper. She has been doing a great job there. So anyways, guys,
did this game help you sleep?
No, it didn't. You guys were there firsthand to call the game, but nobody expected that kind of performance, Jason.
No, I mean, mistakes from players you don't expect them from. Leandro Gonzalez-Pires struggled before he was injured. Brad Gazan's at fault for the final goal. Two goals off of set pieces, which we know is an issue with this team. It was the perfect storm of bad things for Atlanta United. And what troubled me was not so much the mistakes and Houston pouncing on them, was maybe the lack of a response. I expected a little bit more in the second half, and we just didn't get it. It felt really flat. And now you have a home opener with a lot more pressure, because this team's an MLS Cup contender. You drop a 4-0 loss in opening day. You're playing the team that you haven't beaten yet, and you're going to be doing it in front of 70,000 fans. And you have to have a bounce back performance now.
What'd you think of the performance last weekend, Conti? And how do you see Lane and I bouncing back? I mean, there's plenty of motivation. There's going to be probably another MLS record crowd at the Benz on Sunday.
I'm really not worried about Sunday much at all. I think, looking back at Saturday's game, Houston Dynamo looked to me like a team that had played 6 preseason matches and scored 20 goals in those matches. Mm-hmm. Atlanta United looked like a side to me that didn't play a whole lot in the preseason and didn't score a lot in the preseason. And guess what?
Yep.
That's what we had. I mean, Houston Dynamo, they scored 4 goals. Atlanta United did not get on the score sheet. Albert Ellis is going to be a real problem for MLS in 2018. Atlanta United was the first victim, okay? So... Look, it's like I said on the broadcast Saturday with Jason. I said it again on Twitter after the match on Sunday. I would rather be Atlanta United and lose on the road than TFC and lose 2-0 at home. Okay?
Yep.
Protect your home field, try to get draws on the road, and let the chips fall where they may. Obviously, it's distressing. No doubt about it. I mean, you never want to lose 4-0. I read somewhere, I don't know if this is completely accurate, but in terms of scoreline, it was the worst loss in Tata's coaching career. And, I mean, we'd have to probably really, really dig into that. But it wouldn't shock me. I mean, I don't remember a 4-0 loss with Barca. I don't remember a 4-0 loss with Argentina.
Right,
so it's probably up there. But and I think we're going to have a really good discussion over the next hour about the 11 and where to go from here. To me, I'm not freaking out over it, because you had so many guys in unnatural positions within the starting 11 on Saturday, and it produced a disaster. Now, I think there is the opportunity to maybe get guys in a little more of a comfortable spot. Yes, you're playing DC United, but you're on your home pitch at least.
Yep.
And I think that's going to be a big, big shot in the arm for this team.
Here's something about that lineup, though. When you look back at the goals that Atlanta United gave up, it really wasn't the players playing in different spots that was the issue. You know, you look back at Chris McCann, who a lot of people have singled out as a poor performer. I saw match ratings as low as 2-point-something. Well, you look at whoscored.com, which is a great, independent source. It pulls the OptiStats in. He was the highest-rated player for Atlanta United. You look at his passing percentage, you look at the tackles, you look at his involvement. He was honestly fine on Saturday. He wasn't an issue. Leandro Gonzalez-Pires at fault for the first goal. Just, I don't know what you call it. I haven't seen that in a long time.
I think he panicked.
Just completely misread the situation.
Yeah.
It was very strange. So that's goal number one. Goal number two starts with an awful giveaway from Tito Villalba on a back pass. Ends up in a corner that Senderos scores. Goal three, trying to remember where the breakdown was there. There was about 5-6 people out of position on the final build-up to it, but another giveaway in midfield. And then goal number four. you know, it's Brad Kazan on a corner, which you don't expect, or a free kick. You don't expect that mistake. So two mistakes from two of your key players, a bad back pass leads to a set piece, and one breakdown.
Yeah, and you're talking about four guys who were playing their natural positions that you could pin the goals on. I think what I keep coming back to is in the attacking third, yes, where there just wasn't really that technical precision, Almiron playing out on a wing, Gressel playing number 10, which I didn't know that was even really an option.
I saw it a little bit last year, yeah, but it's not my favorite option.
No, and then, you know, Vejalba maybe not fully 100% fit.
I would agree with that.
Nagby, statistically pretty good, but it just, it felt really out of joint, the attacking third. And Atlanta United, yeah, I went back and actually listened to the tape and then watched the match again. Atlanta United actually got a really good scoring opportunity right after Houston scored to open the game in the fifth minute. So it wasn't necessarily, oh, you know, Atlanta United concedes in the fifth minute, and now, you know, they're kind of panicking, and they've checked out on the match. That really wasn't the case at all. It was just one or two touches away from being right there with some very good scoring opportunities in the attacking third, and it wasn't there. So that's why I'm hoping that if maybe we can get some guys in some natural position Sunday against DC United, yeah, you may concede two or three goals, but you might be able to go out and score three or four more goals and win the game that way.
Yeah, and it's like from the preseason, we just have not been clinical in front of goal. And I mean, with Almiron, with that wide open opportunity, he tries to, you know, kick it with his left foot rather than maybe slide it in with his right.
Yeah, like, but those, 8 times out of 10 he scores that with his left foot.
I know, so. But those chances that go up there, like we didn't execute. And I mean, it wasn't like we were just outplayed, you know, off the park, you know, by...
Statistically, Atlanta United, and Jason sent me a note today that I thought was fascinating, and you can really dive into this, but the scoreline may not have actually really been just that. Yeah. It might have actually been a little bit closer than what the scoreline showed. And Atlanta United dominated possession. Now, I do understand in the second half, Houston kind of was bunkering in a little bit on that four-goal lead, but... I mean, there were some statistical things you can extrapolate where you could say, yeah, it was a 4-0 loss, but it may not have actually been that bad.
Yeah, you dig into advanced statistics, which is becoming more of a thing in soccer, and people are starting to figure out how to quantify things. And expected goals is a big one, XG. And you look at this match from an expected goals perspective, Houston had the advantage, but it's like 2.4 to 1.7. Atlanta should have scored twice easily. The chance with Almiron in the 30th minute and the penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Houston probably got one, maybe two, that they, you know, not often are going to score. So the game was a little more even than you think. Same number of shots both ways. Houston had many more on target than Atlanta. That's an issue. That was an issue last season at times.
But, if, for example, Nagby had a shot. I don't remember what minute it was, but Nagby just kind of missed the far post. You know, not a shot on target, but a very good scoring opportunity.
That's the thing about expected goals that I think is tricky to quantify, because it's all about taking every player as the same.
Right.
Darlington Nagby shooting from distance, I'm cool with it every time because of his technique. He has a better chance of scoring from distance than, say, Chris McCann. But in expected goals, it's weighted the same.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the things that make soccer hard to quantify. But when you look at where the chances came from, both teams were fairly even with a slight advantage to Houston, not the 4-0 scoreline that you look at. Atlanta has to limit mistakes. Atlanta has to take better chances and take better opportunities with those chances.
Yeah, if you're just joining us, this is Stoppage Time. I'm with the Atlanta United Radio broadcast team, Jason Longshore and Mike Conti. And please send us your Facebook questions or you know, if you want to have some comments, get some interaction going on Facebook. Like this page, share it with your friends and family, and now we're going to get to those questions later in the show. Let's briefly talk about the starting lineup. A lot of people brought this up, you know, kind of having, like, what I think Conti was kind of getting to is, like, I wasn't expecting, with Almiron being healthy, him being shifted out wide was not my original thought. I thought Gressel would be out wide, or they would have Vejalba on the left and maybe Gressel on the right. I just didn't expect Almiron to go left.
But let's look back at a few things here. You know, everybody talked about Tito Vejalba playing on the left. Tito Vejalba never started on the left last season. It was always start on the right. As the game would evolve, there would be times where he would end up on the left. There'd be switches that would happen, but he didn't start on the left. Gressel didn't start on the left. You know, the position that probably had the most continuity in this midfield was the left side with Yamil Assad last year. Almiron played on the left more than anybody else. And when that lineup came out, I looked at it because I had already identified Kevin Garcia as the weak link for Houston, their right back. So I thought it was a case of let's line up our best player against their weakest player and let's take advantage of this matchup. Then you look at how the game played out. Almiron had touches, but they were never in one-on-one opportunities against Garcia. He never had a chance to run at him where he had a speed advantage. They didn't play direct over the top to make Garcia have to turn and run. The little things where if you have that 1v1 opportunity with your best player against their weakest, you've got to exploit it. Mm-hmm. The first half should have been feeding Almiron and running down that side the whole time.
Isn't it also true to an extent that Garza and even Escobar having their hands full the way that they did with Ellis and Boniek Garcia, Marmanotis, I mean, all those guys, isn't it fair to say that things couldn't really get going down the wing because Garcia and Escobar were really, really challenged?
Didn't need to. Look at what Houston did. Garcia didn't have to get up to help Ellis.
Yeah.
It was, we're going to feed our big, strong forward against a player in Greg Garza who's a good defender but doesn't have the same size. And we're just going to feed him, and we're going to expect our guy to win that battle. And Almiron versus Garcia would have been different because it's speed. You want to play it into space, but you don't have to build up play.
Mm-hmm.
Just give it to Miguel and let him run at Garcia, or if that's not on, go over the top. Go over the top, play the long diagonal, and let Almiron beat Garcia with pace. Didn't happen. So it made no sense to play him on the left if you're not going to do that.
Yeah, and now let's kind of get to LGP. Nobody expected LGP to have a match like that.
It happens.
Yeah, it happens. And then the injury now. I think Doug Robertson at AJC reported as day-to-day. So,
and did not train today.
Right.
That's the report that
we got. Not expecting him this weekend. And I think we were talking before the show, I don't expect him to play the next game either. I don't think don't rush him back. Make sure you've got a little time to the end of the month to your, the next match around April 1st. So
look at it with Orlando. Josue Coleman has a thigh contusion, a little bit different situation, but he's missed a couple weeks of preseason. He's going to miss a couple more weeks. If LGP is out for a month, it wouldn't shock me, but we have to wait and see how he recovers.
And I know we're going to do a little, maybe some starting lineups, maybe some tactics later in the show. But kind of want to get your thoughts on, I know I've heard you on Soccer Down Here talk about it, I've heard you guys on 1990 Game talk about it. Do you see Escobar getting moved to the inside now? Because Parkhurst, I'm assuming he's going to start because he played, good 70, I think, plus minutes. But do you see Escobar moving inside and maybe on the right having Sal come in?
I don't like the pairing of Parkhurst and Larenowitz because of pace. I think the pace is an issue if you play them together. I think it needs to be Escobar or Miles Robinson. Those are your two options. And Escobar is a better player at this point at center back than Miles Robinson, who hasn't played an MLS minute yet.
Mm-hmm.
Escobar played at center back for Newell's Old Boys in his final match against River Plate. Played very well. So that's the easy move for me. Slide him inside. Sal Zizou played most of the preseason. He's the right back. Andrew Wheeler-Amenu is another option at right back. Mm-hmm. If he beats out Zizou, then one of those two at right back, and there you go. Larenowitz back into the midfield.
And kind of before we get to your Facebook questions, guys, I want to kind of talk about maybe some like the lack of confidence the team seems to have right now, kind of in front of goal. Didn't seem like themselves from like last year.
Can I jump in on that for 1 second?
Yeah.
I think lack of confidence is something that's really impossible to quantify, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've heard what they've been saying this week, and I don't really get the feeling that these guys are struggling from a lack of confidence. I think this is more a frustration issue than anything else. We know we're better than this, right? I mean, mm-hmm. where's the side that was second in the league in goals scored last year? The other thing, too, this is only one match.
True.
I mean, we never saw the full starting 11 play together at any point in the preseason, so I almost throw all of that out. You know, you got buried by an avalanche Saturday against Houston. I don't, and Jason might disagree, I don't detect a lack of confidence with anyone on this team right now. You've got veterans, okay? Your young players really aren't in that mix yet. The one thing that I thought Jason made an excellent point on Saturday was you could tell that a lot of the plan for Atlanta United in the attacking third was predicated around Barco.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now you lose Barco almost kind of suddenly. And a little bit at the last minute.
Yeah, I think it was Wednesday. So it was like, yeah.
I mean, Tuesday he got hurt, so right. Wednesday they knew. Okay, so it's a tad bit at the last minute. Mentally, I could see that really having an effect on some of these players. Like, oh, you know, we were so excited to get Barco in the mix. We put so much into getting him. He looked like the real deal in preseason, had a golazo against Minnesota, all of that. Now he can't play. I could see where that might create maybe a little bit of mental stress for this team. I don't really pick up on a lack of confidence, at least not yet.
I think it's more about the way they play, and you look at how fast they can play when they're playing very confidently and when they have that swagger. It's almost like no-look passes. You know, you mm-hmm. know where everybody's going to be. This team doesn't have that yet, and that's a problem in the way that they attack because they generally like to attack through combination play. And when you have guys in different spots and you have guys who haven't played together a lot, Nagby's still getting comfortable with this group. Almiron was in a different spot. I thought Gressel struggled to really drive the team forward on Saturday. So, you know, from a confidence perspective, I think as the match went on, they kind of, you know, got burdened by the expectations and the poor play, and they weren't playing as fast as they can. And when this team is playing confidently, they play very fast. Didn't see that yet. Saw it at times in the Minnesota game. And that's what I keep going back to for what this team can be. They played very fast, very fluid against Minnesota. That's where you want them to get back to. But it's hard when you lose Barco. It's hard when you have the rearranging of pieces in the back line. When it's like that, there has to be a plan B. And the plan B with this team should always be play direct over the top with speed. Because nothing stops speed. You can't take that away. If you're not in sync, okay, play simple and let Tito Villalba run because he's one of the fastest players in the league. You let Martinez run, then look for a quick combination. Need little things like that. Need that plan B, and we didn't see it on Saturday.
And before we get to your Facebook questions, I'll have one positive from that match is the turnout from the Atlanta United supporters.
It was awesome.
Yes.
You guys were there firsthand. I mean, I had the videos Atlanta United sent and other fans sent. I mean, loud. I mean, 200-plus there. I mean, it looked great.
How about the Viking clap in the 81st minute when you're down 4-0, and that's the loudest thing going on in the stadium where, you know, at least two-thirds, if not more, of the crowd were Houston Dynamo supporters. I thought the turnout was great. We flew commercially. There were 17s on our flight going out. On our flight coming back, we stayed downtown. We saw five-stripe kits everywhere. I mean, this is a road match in Houston, and not an easy place to get to. You can't drive there. You got to fly. I thought that was awesome. One other note on that. Houston Dynamo deserves more support.
Mm-hmm.
They deserve more support. First of all, will you get these guys a kit sponsor, please?
Yeah.
I mean, these guys, someone get on the front of their kit, please. They deserve it. I mean, this is a very, very good side with a very, very, I mean, borderline dominant player in Albert Ellis right now. Very well managed by Wilmer Cabrera. And I understand that they've had some down years, but they were fourth in the West last year. They made a playoff run. You know, they had a 4-0 win over one of the most exciting teams in the league in Atlanta United. I was disappointed to see. It wasn't a terrible crowd for Houston on Saturday, but it wasn't great either, and that was disappointing to me.
That team doesn't get talked about enough. I mean, some of the preseason predictions of 10th in the West just blew my mind.
Yeah.
I think it fed into the way Houston played on Saturday. I think they came out with a point to prove, and they did.
All right, let's get to some of your Facebook questions here. Daniel Monroe asks, how conceited should we be if LGP is out for a while?
I should be concerned because
that's
the position you don't really have cover for. You know, you have Larenowitz who can slide in and play the Parkhurst role, more of the organizer. The LGP role, I think it has to be Escobar the way this team is currently constructed. Miles Robinson isn't ready. I think he needs to play USL matches. That's where he needs to have his focus right now. Beyond that, you're looking for a trade. There are center backs in LA with the Galaxy right now that they're trying to figure out who their partner is for Jorgen Skjelvik, one of their signings. Is it Daniel Starris? Is it Dave Romney? Whoever loses that battle is a player who's played minutes in MLS, a solid player who can be a reserve here and a spot starter. So that's an option. Lawrence Olam in Portland is another option. There are a few guys. Another one to keep in mind is somebody who is with Atlanta United too, A.J. Cochran, center back. Because he's been here training in this style of play. He knows what center backs are expected to do with Atlanta United. You have to sign him to an MLS deal. You can't just call him up. But you can make the roster work with that. That's another option to consider if LGP's out for an extended period of time.
The other thing that worries you is you're one injury away now from being in desperate trouble. Like if Parker tweaks whatever's wrong with him, or if, I mean, God forbid Escobar got hurt, or if Zizo, who's up there in years, if he gets hurt. I tend to agree with Jason. I think we could see Zizo in the 11 on Sunday. He started three of the four preseason matches. But if he gets hurt, boy, I mean, now you've really got a problem because you're going to have to put Larenowitz back at center back again, where I don't think any of us want him. I think we want him in the defensive midfield. So, you know, there was a report yesterday that Atlanta United's kind of tapping into that trade market a little bit. They still have time.
May 1st.
Quite a bit of time, actually, really a month and a half plus to do something. But that's my biggest concern because you weren't deep there to begin with. Now you're really not deep. And you're one more injury away now from having an emergency.
That's why you stockpile allocation money. That's why this team can make moves if they have to. Right. And some teams around the league haven't managed for these sorts of things. Atlanta's ready to make a move if they have to.
Let's see. Joe Ramos says, first and foremost, congrats, Jimmy, and his family on the birth of their daughter. I appreciate that, Joe. I know Atlanta United will be just fine. No need to stress. It's this early. And let's remember that Orlando City was a solid playoff team heading into the All-Star break last season. A lot can happen over the course of an MLS season. Hashtag no worries.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think this game has a little bit extra spice on it Sunday because of Atlanta's performance in game one. I think there's a little more expectation. I think there's a little more internal pressure. But no, it doesn't define the season yet.
And I also think, I mean, we saw on Twitter after the match on Saturday, we saw it through the rest of the week and into the first half of this week. And some supporters are really not happy right now. That's good because that means expectations are high, right? I mean, that in a way, you can almost look at what happened on Saturday and say, is this a wake-up call? Or is this kind of like the sobering morning after you have a big night where you just kind of have to have it to find your center and maybe take a step back and look at where you are right now. I really think you've got too many veterans on this club. You have too many smart people on the technical staff and in the front office. 4-0 defeats are not going to happen anymore. You know, I don't know what will happen on Sunday. I don't know if they will win because certainly there are issues with injuries and being shorthanded. DC United will come in healthy. But I think they will look much, much better this Sunday than they did on Saturday in Houston.
I mean, they'll have a point to prove. And, I mean, being in front of that crowd of the 17s, I mean, so 70,000 people, I mean, it's going to be electric.
And they need the support right now. Mm-hmm. You know, now's not the time to be kicking this club in the butt. You know, it's the time to be patting them on the back. No, I'm serious. Yeah. You know, sometimes it's okay to kick them in the butt because they need it. They deserve it. Sometimes you just have to pat these guys on the back.
Yeah.
You know, remember how you felt back in late October when the season had just come to an end against Columbus and how down you felt but how proud you were of the Five Stripes and what they did in their expansion year. You know, I think that's the attitude that I would like to see from supporters right now. These guys need a pat on the back, and they really need the fan support, and they're going to get it Sunday. I mean, I don't think there's much doubt about it. 70,000 tickets sold. I think that's really going to invigorate these guys. Keep in mind, they've been out of town a lot during training camp. They were in Orlando for a week. They were in Charleston for a week. You know, travel to Houston on Friday, get back on Sunday. They haven't really even been in town a whole lot. So the fact now that they get to spend a couple weeks in town, they're going to have two home matches. They're going to have a very valuable week off. I mean, don't underestimate how valuable that is right now with Barco and LGP getting hurt. But I would like to see this community of supporters really pat these guys on the back. And I think we're going to get that.
And I think we've now with the four of the next five matches at home, we've got some matches that we can get that momentum back.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
Well, and where did the run start last year, right? When they started stringing together all those home matches in July going into August, when they were going from Bobby Dodd into Mercedes-Benz. So, I mean, it's early. It's very, very early. And I agree with the commenter. You know, it's way too early to freak out. But this is a good spot in the schedule right now to be having a lot of home games because mm-hmm. they need it.
Let's see. CK says, first, congrats, Jimmy and the fan, for a beautiful new edition. Thanks, CK. And congratulations. I saw he won the custom PS4.
He won the PS4.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I saw that. Stripes. Yeah, very cool.
Let's see. Yeah. Jason Adams says, thank you all who came to Houston this past weekend. And let's see. Daniel Moreau could not watch the game, but sounds like Russell was less than good at a central attacking midfielder. Should we move Miggy back in the middle and start the Powder Springs Pulisic Andrew Carlton on the left this week?
Oh, the Andrew Carlton drama again. Because it's going to be raging until the lineup is announced on Sunday. It's the easy play. I mean, it's the easy one as you drop him in at left wing. He just replaces Barco in your expected starting 11, and there you go. The fact that he didn't play in the second half makes me think that he's not going to start here. I thought he would play in the second half. I thought it was a good spot to see what you get. If he struggles, it's okay. The game was 4-0 to begin with. If he comes in and gives you a spark, then you know you can count on that going forward. The fact he didn't play makes me think that Tata Martino feels like he's not ready yet. I don't know that for sure. Tata's talked about bringing him along. He's understanding of his age. We saw what he did in Charleston. Is he ready to go 90? I don't know. But the left wing is an issue because there's really not a natural replacement for Ezequiel Barco on the left wing other than Andrew Carlton. You're moving guys around. If it's not Almiron, it's probably Darlington Nagbe on the left because that's where he played primarily in Portland last year. Do you go with Nagbe on the left, Almiron in the middle, Vishalba on the right, Martinez up top, Larenowitz as the six, and then who at the eight?
Kratz or...
Is it Kratz? Is it McCann? Is it Gressel? Is it Wheeler Amenu?
Is Vishalba going to the left just not an option?
It could be. We just haven't seen it from a starting perspective. We haven't seen it in a regular perspective.
And
it
if
happens
that,
in matches.
If that were an option, they probably would have just done it in Houston.
I would assume so. But then the other option is the three-man back line that we've talked about in preseason. Tata Martino has been working on it. We saw it a lot in second halves in preseason. Do you go to that here? You know, what does that look like with Parkhurst, Escobar, Zizo? He played in the three-man back line with the Red Bulls. Is it Larenowitz? Then it's a little bit different role. I'm not as big of a fan of that. Is it Robinson? You've had a whole week to prepare. We'll see. No. I don't know. I would keep it simple. For me, I'd go 4-2-3-1. I probably wouldn't go with Carlton to start just because he didn't play in Houston. Mm-hmm. And that concerns me a little bit about what the technical staff thinks of his readiness.
And to build on that, I think we need to remember that at the end of the Carolina Challenge Cup, Tata said that Andrew Carlton was closer to the first team now than he was at the start of training camp. I interpret that to mean he wasn't very close at the start of training camp. So just because he's closer doesn't mean he's there.
Right.
The fact that he was in the 18 is significant, I think, in Houston. I think that's significant. We can read into that. He's closer. He's not there yet. That was probably my biggest surprise outside of the scoreline
right. From
Saturday was that Vasquez got in over Carlton for 30 minutes. You had nothing to lose by playing
right.
him.
Yeah.
What's the worst that can happen? You're already down 4-0.
Yeah, for me at that 60-minute mark, it wasn't even the Vasquez sub that surprised me. It was the Kratz for Nagbe sub. That's where I would have thought.
Yeah.
That's where I would have went to Carlton. You give him some time to ease into the match, give him 30 minutes and see what you can get.
Yeah.
But we're not there every day. We don't see training every day
either.
So.
That's true.
Let's see. Jason Adams says, please follow us at Terminus Legion Houston. I've seen them on Twitter.
Yeah, they're doing
a
lot of stuff.
Yeah.
A Terminus Legion chapter in Houston, Texas.
Let's see. Robin says, have teams figure out that parking the bus and counterattack is how to beat Atlanta United? Our passing in the final third isn't breaking down. Defenses lacks precision.
Houston didn't park the bus. Let's break this everybody parks the bus against Atlanta United thing right here, because they don't. Red Bulls didn't park the bus last year against Atlanta United. Think back to the game at Red Bull Arena. That was both teams pressing, wide open game. Not everybody parks the bus. Houston didn't. I didn't think Houston parked the bus at all.
I don't think so.
Houston, what they do is when they recover the ball, they attack very quickly and directly. Mm-hmm. That's not parking the bus. Houston didn't play two defensively minded midfielders. Eric Alexander wants to play, he wants to combine and get forward. Boniek Garcia was all over the field in the attack, and they played three up top very high. So DC United is a little different. You're looking at a back line that's missing their left back, Taylor Kemp. You know, you have O'Neill Fisher playing on the opposite side. You have a weak right back in Nick DeLeon, who struggled on Saturday in Orlando. But you are missing one of your holding midfielders in Russell Canales. You have two new faces in there, Junior Moreno, Ulysses Segura. Are they really a team built to park the bus like they did last year? I don't think they are. I think they'll be conservative, and I think they'll sit back, especially if they get a goal and get a lead. That, again, it doesn't necessarily mean it's parking the bus. Parking the bus to me is you put everybody behind the ball, you have no strategy to get forward, you're just trying to keep the other team off the board. Mm-hmm. Houston absolutely had a strategy to get forward. Oh, yeah. It was play to Albert Ellis and let him win the individual battle. And he did.
Which he did, repeatedly.
Yep.
By the way, DC United parking the bus, which they didn't do, against Orlando City, up a man for the final 49 minutes, gave up opportunity after opportunity after opportunity, eventually conceded right at the end to take a 1-1 draw. So they're, I don't know if they're adept enough to even be able to employ that strategy right now.
They had some different faces last year, and they could do it a little differently. And you had Bill Hamid, who you just let him make the big saves and feed off of that. David Alstead's not that type of goalkeeper. You know, he's not the same big save guy. I think this DC team is going to try to play a little bit in midfield. Might they be a little more conservative? Sure. Doesn't mean it's parking the bus, though.
Let's see. CK, we're going to get to a couple more, and then let's get into the DC United preview. Let's see. CK says, on to the important things. It's awesome that you have the new flag up, but I like to offer my ironing services.
Aha.
Said, P.S., I work for Scars. I'm looking at you, Jimmy. Well, I might take you up on that because we, and then Dutch, my boss, says, one thing we don't not have at the sports station is an iron. You're lucky we have shirts.
Yeah.
So. Hey,
yeah, right.
I just got it out of the package, so I thought I'd put it up for you.
There's a reason why we're on radio and not television,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And let's get the Ryan Fitzpatrick's question, and then we'll go back to the show. So Miggy's lack of a right foot reared its ugly head again last week. It seems like this issue hasn't been addressed. Do you think this will hurt his chances with top European teams? Have you heard anything about coaches working with him on this? Hashtag still love Miggy.
Diego Maradona was a one-footed player and made a pretty nice career of it. You know, there's lots of these guys. Ryan Giggs,
yep,
was a extremely one-footed player.
Yes.
And he figured out a way to make it work. If you're lefty, I think it's a little bit easier to be one-footed because it's just always a little different. You don't see as many left-footed players. He's not going to grow a right foot suddenly and start striking the ball from 40 yards with a right foot. That's not his game. You know, I mean, it's just that he is what he is at this point. Can he get a little bit better? Sure. Can he get to where on that play in the 30th minute he's touching it home with the right foot rather than going for the more difficult left-footed shot? Sure. He's more of a finished product at this point, though. You know, this is not a 12-year-old player that you're trying to teach to be two-footed. So, you know, I mean, he has other gifts that he can make work. You know, he doesn't have to all of a sudden become a two-footed player. You look around the world, there are a lot of players who are one-footed, primarily.
Mm-hmm.
Miggy's a little more on the extreme side of being one-footed, but there's plenty of guys who've made it work.
And now let's get into the Atlanta United versus DC United preview, guys. What are your thoughts, Jason? I know we've got the board here. We might draw up some potential starting lineups. You're starting 11 if you're going into the match as a manager. How do you see us lining up, guys? Do you see, like we talked about earlier, the Escobar shifting in the center back,
yeah,
you know, having Almiron more centrally, and then who do we start on the left wing? Kind of saying, is Nagby an option? Do we move maybe Kratz in the midfield? What do you see happening?
Yeah, it's the tricky thing, is how you make this work without Leandro Gonzalez Pires, and we're assuming he's not going to be ready to play on Sunday. That could change. I think you have to move Escobar central. And I think you're playing either Zizo or Wheeler Aminu at right back. And you're probably going Zizo because he's the veteran. Played a lot in preseason, as Mike said earlier. Then you want to get Jeff Lerenowitz in the midfield.
Mm-hmm.
And then how do you partner it? How do you make it work? You know, do you go ahead and play Lerenowitz and Nagby? Then who plays on the left? Do you play Lerenowitz and Kratz and play Nagby on the left? I think we're all under the impression we want Miguel Almiron in the middle. We want T.W. Schaub on the right, Joseph Martinez up top. But how do you make it work? And how is what is going to be the best opportunity to get you 3 points in this match? Because before a 4-0 loss in the opener, you might have thought, okay, we're still finding ourselves. We're going to try some things. We're going to be a little experimental and stuff. I don't think you can really afford to do that now. I think you have to put the lineup out there that gives you the best chance to win. Is that Nagby on the left? I don't know. I'm honestly not sure yet. That's the hard thing about this right now with this team. It's been so long since we've seen the first choice group. I don't know what the best combination is right now. And that's what these next couple of days of training are going to help Tata Martino figure out. It's been a tough preseason because of the injuries. Mm-hmm. It's been really difficult. And I don't know what the best lineup choice is, to be honest, at this point.
It's hard building up that team chemistry with so many injuries in the preseason, Mike.
Really is. But I'll go back to who has enough experience and has proven to be fit. And to me, that's Sal Zizzo. So starting from the back going forward, Zizzo, Parkhurst, I agree, Escobar, Garza, right?
Yes.
Okay. We want Larenowitz to come up in a kind of a central defensive midfield. If it were me, Nagby on the left, Almiron in the middle, Thajaba on the right, and then Martinez up top. You've got to figure out, okay, I guess Gressel is probably not going to be.
It could be.
I guess he could be.
I don't like him as the eight as much.
Right. Mm-hmm. I would be, put it to you this way, I'd be cool with him being a sub if they move Nagby up. But it's tricky. I mean, this is a really, for all of you out there who think that they just kind of throw darts and or they play cards all week and then on Sunday they roll out 11. No, I mean, this is hard. And a lot of it's going to be dictated by matchup. But
that's a big part here.
But I think there is no doubt that Atlanta United's best chance to win is predicated on Almiron playing the number 10 and Larenowitz moving up into the midfield. I think that is everything else, figure out.
See, but I'll flip it.
Okay.
I think the important parts are dealing with DC's speed.
Okay.
And that's why the number 8 role is very tricky here, because you could play Larenowitz and McCann with Parkhurst behind him and Escobar. That's putting a lot of pressure on Escobar to be the only runner in the group. Kratz, a little more athletic. Gressel, a little more athletic. You could pair him with Larenowitz. Because DC, against Orlando, a lot of times it looked like a 4-1-4-1. They played Junior Moreno sitting in front of their back four, and then they played Ulises Segura high with Zoltan Stieber. Luciano Acosta's back in the lineup this week. Luciano Acosta torched Atlanta United last year in 3 matches.
He had 5 goals on the season, and 2 of them came against Atlanta United. Mm-hmm. Also had an assist against Atlanta United.
And every time he scored last year, DC United won. And they didn't win many times last year.
Right.
Luciano Acosta is a dangerous player. He's 5'3", very quick. You have to factor that in because he'll probably be one of those central attacking midfielders. So pace becomes a bigger priority here. You know, that's why I'm thinking you're either looking at Nagby, asking him to do a lot of defensive work and a lot of defensive responsibility that's not his strong suit, or you're looking at a player like Kevin Kratz. And to me, I would lean towards Kratz, and I'd lean towards Nagby on the left wing. I think that puts players in a position to get a result in this match. And you've got to start thinking that way a little bit. You know, the idea of playing guys together to build up and get better game after game, if you drop points early in the season, it makes it harder later.
No, you're in emergency mode right now.
A little bit.
I mean, it's a long
emergency
season.
Emergency maybe not, but you need a positive result
right here.
Right.
Let me put it to you a different way. Emergency is the wrong word. I take that back. But it's almost like you build a new house and the roof is leaking. So do you try to buy shingles and let it leak a little longer, or do you put a tarp over it until the shingles come in?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
All right, Barco and LGP are the shingles. All right, you've ordered them from Amazon, but they're on back order. So I say you go out and get a tarp. And you do whatever you need to do right now. Yeah, I think you're looking at these next 2 matches. You've got to get 4 points out of these next, minimum, out of these next 2 matches. And ideally, the 3 can come on Sunday, because I think psychologically you've also got that aspect of DC United, a side that you lost to three times last year. You're going to play them three times this year. You've got to get over that psychological hump with these guys. And quite frankly, they've set this match up to be the showcase game for Atlanta United, right? It's on ESPN, 70,000 people. So Atlanta United, Mercedes-Benz Stadium, they've done what they can to make this the showpiece, emotional game that Atlanta United can go out and try to put a good effort in front of their home fans. Now you've got to convert. But I think you've got to get 4 points out of these next two matches.
Yeah, it's critical to bounce back from that loss and to go for it and gain some momentum in these upcoming matches. And just one small thing before we get to some Facebook questions. Did you want to get to the board? Or?
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about the defensive rotation, because think back to last year, and I'll show you kind of how it played out last year with left back, right back, two center backs, and then two holding mids. So you're looking at that. Your outside backs going forward, and then when there was a turnover here and you had a counterattack, you had your two center backs, you had Larenowitz and Carmona sat deep. That gave you protection. That gave you four in the back. These guys were free to go. They were free to go consistently. This year, the flavor of this group is different because of Darlington Nagbe at the eight. He's a different player than Carlos Carmona. So you have your two center backs, you have your outside backs. It's going to look a little bit more of a base like this, with Nagbe higher up the field. Mm-hmm. What happens is if these guys go and they're gone, Nagby's finding space here, ball turns over, suddenly it's three. That's what happened against Houston a lot. When the ball turned over, your transition was different. What you have to do in that regard, if you're going to play with an aggressive eight and you're going to play with outside backs you like to get forward, let's say the ball is on this side. And let's say that's Greg Garza. So he's up very high. Your left winger's up here. Your two center backs are staying home. Your number six is staying home. And let's say Nagby's here trying to find the play too. So they're trying to find a combination, a triangle here. Your right back, and if we're thinking it's Sal Zizo in this match, he can't go. He can't sit up here and look for that play. He's got to sit at home. And then what happens is he slides over and it becomes that line of three. Mm-hmm. Then you've got cover.
Right.
That's what's going to have to happen at times this season with a six and a more aggressive eight, as opposed to last year with Carmona, who didn't make the same movements that Nagbe did. Carmona would sit here, your outside backs could go. This year, one of your outside backs, whoever's on the opposite side, is really going to have to sit at home more. And I think against DC, that's going to be a big one, because what DC likes to do is when they get in transition, they like to throw it up top to Darren Maddox. Darren Maddox is big and strong and fast. You want to have cover for that. Okay, if you match up Escobar, you tell Franco Escobar, you're sticking with Darren Maddox, you're following him everywhere. If he goes to get a sip of water, you're following him over there and getting a sip yourself. Then your cover is Parkhurst, not fast. You need one more guy. Mm-hmm. And then what you can do if you do that, Escobar's behind Maddox looking for the long ball. He's covering him to not let him turn. You can have Larenowitz front him, and it makes it a lot harder to find him. You bracket him in, it's a lot harder to find him. Then you're making DC try to build up play. That's not really their strong suit. They're better at it now, but you want to make them do it and show you. You want to make them try to combine with Paul Arriola, who's been there since August, Yamil Asad, who's been there for a couple of weeks, Luciano Acosta, who didn't play last week, Segura's new, Moreno's new, lots of new faces, not really much chemistry. Make them try to combine. Make it hard for them to play simple and play to Maddox.
Is Dutch still watching?
I'm not sure.
Can we get a Telestrator, Dutch?
I'd love to have a Telestrator.
It's probably only a couple grand. Like, I mean, that was really good, but man, we need a Telestrator. That was a great breakdown.
I'd love to have a Telestrator. Yeah. That would be fun.
No, that was a great breakdown. I think we all learned something.
Do I get to make the Madden noises with the Telestrator?
You probably could. just a lot of boom and you know, pow and all yeah. that. But no, I that was a great breakdown.
No, very good.
Great breakdown.
Look forward. We should be doing that every week. I think that was great for the audience. One more thing before we get to the Facebook questions: the Yamil Assad return to Atlanta.
This is the game, right? I mean, this is what happens.
Yeah.
Players move. Players come back to play former teams. Yamil talked about it this week. He said he's not going to celebrate a goal if he scores it. He doesn't want to disrespect the Atlanta fans.
And that's customary, by the way, when
that's
you go
the
to
tradition. Face your, yeah, I mean, that's when you leave and it's not the best of circumstances, you might celebrate it a little extra.
Yeah.
But when you leave in this case where Yamil Assad had a lot of love for Atlanta, a lot of love for the 17s, he's going to be very respectful of that. And he wants to score, and he wants to win. But he's not gonna, you know, celebrate and kind of throw that at Atlanta United fans' faces.
That's amazing. Last year scored the first goal of Atlanta United history, first goal of the season. This year he scored the first DC United goal.
A little fluky this time.
Yeah, a little,
little fluky.
All right, let's get to your final Facebook questions to wrap up the show. Daniel Moreau says. Ryan says Arjen Robben plays for Bayern Munich. Is one of the,
that's another one-footed
one
player.
Best
good
player,
call.
Yeah, best players of the last 20 years, and his right foot is nothing more than theoretical.
He also falls down a lot. He's good at that. Ask Mexico fans.
Theory, yes.
No era penal.
Let's see. CK says, thank you. I'll have you guys over to play some FIFA on the PS4 when I get moved in and the furniture.
All right.
Cool.
We won't help you move, though.
No.
You're on your own.
Let's see. That. Bronson says, I'm not sure how to pronounce this guy's name, but thoughts on the Dutch sensation Jurgen Mechic? I'm not sure how to pronounce that name.
I have not heard we're trying to acquire him.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough to pull off an acquisition of anybody of that type of caliber right now because they can't replace him.
Right.
You know, you're looking at guys who are out of contract. We had a question come through soccer down here this morning is why aren't they looking at Michael Essien as a number six? Michael Essien hasn't played since November, and he was playing in Indonesia, and he's 35. Is that what you really want? I don't think so. You know, Alex Song was another one who was brought up.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't played since September, and he was playing in Russia.
I'd play a second teamer before you would do that.
Yeah, I would.
Because at least they've been in your system.
Exactly. That's why when I look at center back, you know, I think A.J. Cochran is a player to look at because he's been here since the beginning of February, training in a similar style. Easy to slot him in. It's easy right now to have him play with the first team and see what you got rather than bringing in a player who is – on the outs, usually for a reason. I mean, Orlando picked up Mane, right, at center back. Mane was suspended by Wolfsburg and basically told not to come back. And that was who they had to go get at that point in the transfer window. That's a risk. There's usually a reason why somebody's suspended and told not to come back. Is that what you want to bring in? I don't know. It's tough. It's tough. With injuries, it's very difficult. But I think there's players within the league that would make a better option than that type of deal.
Darren Eales back on Twitter so I can get some more cryptic tweets.
Darren's busy.
He's very busy.
Darren's trying to track down some extra defensive midfielders or center backs or what have you.
Yeah, and on top of that, you've also got the lead up to the first home match on Sunday. They're doing a lot of events around that. I mean, you saw the flag thing yesterday. Jason was at Atlantic Station last night. There are going to be more and more events. I'm sure if you're a season ticket holder, you probably know about some of these. So this is a busy time. I'm sure it's not going to take Darren away from his football duties, if you will. But, boy, I know they are slammed up there.
Darren Hills is going to be on Dukes and Bell at 3:20 today.
See, he is so busy coming down here, he can't even talk to Michael Essien right now, right? Don't talk to Michael Essien.
Let's see. Please don't. Please,
Christopher Schmidt says, bigger need, central defensive midfielder or center back?
Center back. It's not even close. Center back. Because you have options in the midfield. You can move pieces around. Center back, right now, you have Michael Parkhurst, you have Leandro Gonzalez Pires, you have Miles Robinson, who needs to play USL minutes starting on the 24th with Atlanta United 2. And that's it, dedicated center backs. You have Escobar, who can move in. You have Zizo, who can play in a three-man back line. You have Lernowitz, who can move back. You have three dedicated center backs. You've got to go get somebody if LGP's out for any extended period of time.
And one more thing before we wrap up. Score predictions? Anybody's?
I'll go on the record. 3-1 Atlanta United. I think it's going to be a little sloppy early, but I think Atlanta simplifies things. And if the combination play is not there, I think they keep it simple. I think they play a little more direct. They get a boost from the fans. I'm not convinced DC is there yet. I think they're going to have a lot of chemistry issues with all these new faces. I think there's a lot of pressure on DC United right now, too, because they finally spent some money this offseason. They're going to have to perform, and they've got that long home stretch coming up later this year. Any team who's ever had that type of extended home run has made the playoffs every single time in Major League Soccer. Will DC do it? It's going to be a big turnaround to get there. I'm not convinced they can.
What do you think, Gandhi?
It's a cop-out. I don't give predictions on games on which I'm calling. Okay. But I will say this. Please, can we get a goal? Because yeah. I'd really like to call a goal. Maybe a really nice one. That'd be nice.
I'm gonna go 2-1.
Yeah. There will be goals. I mean, Atlanta United is not going to get a shutout. I think we can all agree on that. Not 2 weeks in a row. They're too good for that.
And thank you again for stopping by for Stoppage Time. I'm Jimmy Vance, of Jason Longshore, Mike Conti. A couple notes for this weekend. We are going to be doing, Nighttown and Games is going to be doing kind of like a pre show, 1-3. I believe John Fricke and Jarrett Smith from for us and is on Soccer Down Here is going to do a show with them for 2 hours leading up to the match. And the match is going to be on WAOK for the fans. So there's going to be a 30 minutes pre show at 2:30 and then an hour post.
Yeah.
And also, go to the Atlanta United Facebook page. I believe it's at 2 p.m. that you guys
an hour before kick.
Hour before kick. They're going to do a Facebook Live, and they're going to give you the exclusive starting lineup. So it's going to be a big day for the Five Stripes and the 17s.
Yeah, that's where you get the lineup first, an hour before kick at Atlanta United's Facebook page. Then 30 minutes before kick, we go on air on WAOK. Then we're with you for an hour afterwards. If you're worried about finding AOK on your dial, you can also pull it up on the Atlanta United app. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can also pull it up on TuneIn, the mobile link at radio.com,
right.
Lots of different ways. And for that post-match coverage especially, tweet at us. We want to hear your thoughts as the match goes on. Tweet at myself at Longshoe, Mike Conti 929, ATL Soccer 929. Mm-hmm. Tweet at us and let us know. We incorporate that into the post-match coverage.
And thanks again for stopping by. And also one more note: Twin Peaks on Friday, because this Friday we're going to do a supporter group takeover. So we've got Terminus Legion, the Faction, Footy Mob, and Resurgence all going to be on the air, kind of talking about their supporter group and the match ahead in the season. And the Dukes and Bell will be live at Twin Peaks from 2 to 7 in Buckhead. So make sure you stop by there. We're going to be giving away. Three scarves.
How many?
Three scarves.
Three?
Oh, three.
These are really limited edition.
Well, we're devaluing these if we're giving away three. We might want to go one at a time here.
Very limited edition.
It,
so.
It is true, by the way, if you pick up these scarves, nickels will come out because they are that expensive.
We had people hanging out yesterday at Atlantic Station waiting for the draw because you had to be present to win. It was getting kind of chilly, and people were hanging out. There were threats made.
Threats?
People were very upset about not winning the scarf.
Oof.
They want the schedule of where they can go try to win a scarf. It's out of hand. It's out of hand.
Thanks again for stopping by for Stoppage Time. Make sure you guys tune into us all this week for Lane Night interviews and check out the guys on the call. If you cannot make it to the match, listen to Conti and Jason Longshore. So thanks for stopping by for Stoppage Time, and we'll talk to you next week.